really? That's my job to always help people? Like, sign me up. Word on the street is that you're a free agent, one of those calls. And I'm like, wow, yeah, news travels fast. Is this a moment where I might want to change direction? I don't know. I'm still reeling a little bit. I was really feeling the pain. I just got turfed from this company that you know very well. And that's not necessarily a good look. You're coming on the back of that and doubling down on me. That was just such an incredible feeling of uplift and belief from another person. I'm like, wow.
You didn't feel like an investor. You still spoke like a product guy.
That's just very powerful and something that I'm really grateful for.
You're listening to The Helpful Podcast, where I ask accomplished people who help them. My name is Vahid Josey, and you're going to hear authentic stories of vulnerability, of people giving when they have nothing to gain. My next guest stumbled. He was feeling it. His helper, though, doubled down on him, and it couldn't have turned out better. This is Isaac Swain and his helpful story.
Sup, Isaac? How's it going, man?
Vahid, I'm very glad to be here. My goodness, this is going to be great.
For folks might not know this, but like I lived in Montreal just until a few months ago. And one of the main folks that I came to Montreal just to be closer to was you. And I'm just so happy that I ended up living just a few blocks from you. So those random bike rides and actually taking your bike on the triathlon was like hella fun. Until you lost the bike.
That's too bad. But hey, it's always been fun hanging out with you, even when we lived in different cities. It was pretty great to have you here. Miss you. But that means we get together for stuff like this.
Yeah, man. And like any conference, any CTM events. It's always good to, you know, just in context, we make it work. Dude, exactly. I've known you forever. And like, I love saying the inception story of how we met. But for the folks that don't know you, give a little bio, man.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm Isaac. These days, I'm a partner at Pender Ventures, which is a B2B SaaS investor investing at Series A. Firm is based in Vancouver. I am still in Montreal for anyone who's confused about it. Have been here about 10 years. Prior to Pender, was at Real Ventures doing VC as well. So spent the last part of my career in VC and the whole first part in product management, starting in New York, then did a whole stint in Singapore, made my way to Montreal, did some product stuff here. And so a product guy turned venture capitalist is the little sort of way to capture that. And the other thing that I've been very passionate about, and I think one reason that you and I have connected, is community building. Creating meetups, mentoring, being involved in different community platforms, just finding a way to give back to the community that I've gotten a lot out of. And you get that gratification, you pay it forward. And it's just fun. I'm very much extrovert, gregarious, like to meet people. And so if you get out there and do these kind of projects, then you get to meet people and go to fun stuff. So I've done a lot in the product management community, done a lot in the startup community. And those two things, I guess, are what keep me going today, kind of working with startups, investing, and then giving back to this whole technology and innovation community. And obviously, the two are very connected to each other.
So what took you to product management? Because you didn't really study anything relevant to tech.
So that's great. And it just shows who knows what the plan is. But to go all the way back to the beginning, I studied religion and philosophy in undergrad at Columbia. And to no great plan, it's just I had, you know, the kind of supportive parents who were like, go for it. And I think maybe it was a time, there's more pressure now. You got to study something really practical. But at the time it was like, yeah, go for it. And met some people in my course of study who were doing a startup in the dot-com boom and dropped out of school to join the startup, which I knew nothing about. And actually the things I knew about it, I wasn't even sure it was going to be successful, but it was just one of those opportunistic things of, hey, this seems a kind of unique experience on the one hand versus Columbia. I think it was started in like the 1800s or whatever. So I was like, the school is still going to be here. So let's see if I can go after it. The startup didn't go anywhere, but I got exposed to this whole world of technology and the internet. Like I was aware of it, but not really. It just wasn't my thing. And I wasn't an engineer and I wasn't a tech geek and I wasn't a gamer. And that 1 year was like, well, that is probably a place where you could spend your whole career around very intelligent people. You could make money. You could build nice things, like maybe lean into that lucky break of finding out that world. And so you know, didn't get out to it right away. I traveled and, you know, went around the world a little bit and did other kind of projects to develop myself. But when it's like, you do have to get a job, I used that experience in a startup to get into, it was a publishing company, Scholastic, into what was effectively a low-level product management role, which it wasn't even called that at the time. It was kind of earlier days of product management. And I think the way it worked for me is because product is about sitting in between these very creative engineers and designers, and then the rest of the business and the market and the customer try to be this translation point and this place where information coalesces. You help people make decisions, you keep things on track and move things forward. And that part I was good at. And I had the versatile mindset and the ability to do like Gantt charts and do project management, but also to think about strategic value and, you know, also hang out with the UX people and be like, what about this, you know, button over here? So I think versatility is a trait that helps product managers. I just worked. I was like, I could actually be good at this. And you get positive feedback, you move up, you get promoted, and just ran with it. And to this day, even though I don't do it anymore, that feeling of really getting to hang out with the truly creative people, these engineers and designers and other practitioners who do stuff I could never do, but like I have some role to play. And together we build this thing that is useful or beautiful or fun. What a joy. And it just exercised, it's almost like every part of my brain and my being, the social parts, the analytical parts and everything. I just loved it and I got a lot out of it throughout. And still, it's a bit of my calling card as an investor is to dive deep on product, because that's what I have a background in.
So I met you right as you make the transition from product investment. I remember we were at some party at TWG and I'm talking to you, just say, hi, how's it going? And you didn't feel like an investor. You still spoke like a product guy. And like in my head, there's this dissonance. I'm like, product person, GP, which one? And then when we got to, we just kept on chatting, I was like, okay, now I understand the switch has happened. So tell me how you made the switch.
The switch, I won't give the whole, because I think we're going to talk a little bit about tough times and people supporting you. And that kind of, that is the story of the switch. So I'll keep some things under wraps for the rest of the pod, but I'll say in terms of evolving into an investor, like it is a different job and you have to, you're putting on a different hat and you're learning like, and you're, or you're sitting at a different seat at the table, however, whatever metaphor you want to use, that dictates a lot. Like you're not the product manager anymore. You're the investor. You need to analyze the company and the revenue stream and the go-to-market strategy and the founder's ability to scale. And so you're being asked to assess a different set of questions. And that happens right away. And in fact, if you approach it like a product manager and you're spending like 80% of the time, look at the interface and the this and that, no, you're doing it wrong. Now that's not your job anymore. And so in that way, it was actually, kind of, you're like, you got to switch. You got to change your game. Your job is different. The questions you're answering are different. And you're around, I was at Real Ventures. I was around a bunch of other skilled, experienced investors who could help me shift my mindset while also keeping that one foot or that one toe and having that product lens. So I think that shift was very natural. There, VC is an apprentice game. So it might be natural to make the shift. It takes a long time to actually know what you're doing and just made a ton of mistakes. And it takes a long time to find your feet and understand the way that you want to do it. So, and honestly, it's still going, I'm like, and it will probably never end. And the feedback loops are very slow. So it takes a long time to learn even which decisions you made were good ones. So that process is very long, actually becoming a good investor, but changing the hat or changing the mindset happened pretty quickly.
How did you unlearn? Like, how did you manage to unlearn product stuff? Because like you're saying, it's a different paradigm. You look at different problems.
You just have to put it down. You just have to say, now that is 10% of my analysis. I might go meet with the VP of product for the investment opportunity, or I might have a product demo. And when we're talking about product, we're going to talk about problem and I'm going to flex in that way and use all of my intelligence, but I just can't write a memo about a product. I have to write a memo about the company. So it's kind of forced on you. But I will say, maybe not just about being a product manager, but I think all the people who come into VC as operators, whether they're founders or head of sales or product or design or whatever, it does ground them in the challenges, stresses, and overall difficulties of building these products. Whether you're at 0 to 0.5, 0.5 to 1, 1 to 2, it's all hard. And it just builds in a little bit of humility, a bit of empathy, of like, because you're sitting there, it's just very easy for a VC to talk about it like it's not that hard, or to talk about it in a way that sort of glosses over all of the pain and suffering and indeterminacy and late nights and everything that goes into it. It's just easy to skip over it and talk about it. It's like, well, but how much revenue do you have? And not come to the person with a little bit of connection of like, hey, first of all, it's incredible what you've built. And let's recognize all the work that went into it. And if you're giving me a projection or a prediction, I'm not going to treat it like gold. I'm going to treat it like a hypothesis, because I know that who knows what's going to happen. And so I think that part, I still haven't unlearned. And like, I don't want to unlearn it. Like, I do not want to be. And a lot of my community building and other projects, I do them to have something a little bit harder to hold on to on the day to day that keeps me honest of, okay, I'm building this program, I'm building this little company or whatever my things are. And I'm reminded, oh yeah, like somebody's got to do the LinkedIn post, you know, somebody's got to, you know, do the spreadsheet, somebody's got to get the $5,000 of sponsorship, all this like nitty gritty work that just keeps you honest. Cause you know, the world comes to you, but not, you got to knock on some doors. Right? And so that part, I just don't want to unlearn. And hopefully I'll be able to hold on to that part of who I am.
I respect that. There's a bunch of questions I can ask you with like PM versus VC, but I want to ask you about tough times that you went through. Things were super hard and a helping hand came and took you out of it. Would love to hear a few stories of this.
I would love to share some, and I've got one absolutely teed up. First of all, I'll just say, you know, especially this year has been crazy in the world. Tough times are very much relative, and I spent a lot of time this year in particular feeling grateful for how non-tough my life is compared to some. We got two kids, they're healthy, we live in a nice house, we live in a very stable, relatively well-governed society that's far away from physical violence. So very, very grateful for that all the time, but especially this year. Nevertheless, like, we're all on our own journey and we all hit bumps in the road. So I'll talk about one that I experienced, and it is that transition point between my product management career and my VC career. And so to roll it back a little bit before that, I moved to Montreal with my family. We had little kids. My wife got a job at McGill. And so it was like the plan was to move back. And I was very passionate about product management. And I met a bunch of people, including a lot of people at Real Ventures who worked the heart and soul, and some still are the heart and soul, but very much at that time, 2013, heart and soul of the Montreal startup ecosystem, meaning they'd invested in lots and lots of different companies that were relevant to me. They had done the Notman House project, which was really growing and thriving. They had help. They were running Founder Fuel. They were helping with other big platforms like Startup Fest. So met a bunch of people in the Real Ventures direct ecosystem, like the partners, and ended up working for one of their companies, Frank and Oak. And so my first 2 years, was at Frank and Oak, this very cool, interesting e-com company that had been backed by Real. John Stokes was on the board. And so I'm like bumping into the Real Ventures people there. I get involved in Notman House as a volunteer. I become a mentor in Founder Fuel, which was the premier. And I know you've been involved as well. And so I'm getting sucked into their world from every angle because they're into early stage startups and they're into community building. And I'm into early stage startups and I'm into community building. So we just were really very, very. And so in those first 2 years, we crossed paths in a lot of different ways, all of the founder, all of the partners, and a lot of the employees. First 2 years at Frank and Oak, I leave Franken Oak. I do a whole kind of process, wide open. What's my next move? Still want to do product, very passionate about it. And you know, get 40 coffees, meet everybody I can. And I end up at Sonder, which at the time was called Flatbook, another real ventures company that had come out of Founder Fuel. And it was not surprising that would be the case, right? Because again, they were like in all of the companies and they were in all of the cool, fast moving, not everyone, obviously, but very many. So then again, I'm back in the real ventures ecosystem. Now it's, I think Sam was on the board for a while. And I remember JS came in and gave like a talk about AI to, this was actually like before AI was hot to trot. And I was like, oh, this guy's interesting what he's talking about. So once again, I'm back in the real ventures ecosystem, in a way, working for Sonder. And that company was just a wild ride, like a very complicated business that they run, which is a kind of tech-enabled hospitality business. So there's just, you got to get the apartments, you got to get the furniture, you got to stick it in, you got to list it on Airbnb, you got to, and so just all a ton of moving parts. Fascinating to learn about that whole industry and how technology can disrupt it. The Francis and Lucas were incredibly hard driving, intense. We're too young to know any different. Like, we're just going to go after this market and we don't care if we don't have a competitive advantage. So the culture was very intense, very performance oriented, very fast moving, very energizing. And it was just fabulous. And I actually was able to bring a lot of very valuable things to the company when I joined, because I had more experience, because I knew how to do product management. So I was able to put in frameworks and partner with Eric, who is the CTO, to actually get product moving in a more systematic way. But my work in the company extended well beyond that. Like, I was managing a bunch of other business units because we didn't have enough executives. I was very much a close confidant of more of Lucas than of Francis, but of the founders. And I was part of this very small executive team that was making a lot of decisions for the fate of the company, because there were five of us. It was Francis, Lucas, me, Eric, and Martin Picard, who ended up going through the whole cycle with them. But so it was just fabulous. Like, I was having a big impact. The company went through crazy ups and downs, but ended up raising a Series A from Spark. And so now we had this money and we were planning out the future. And, you know, it was really good. And then it got less good quickly. Like, startup years are like dog years. So, you know, like 3 months can be like a year. And so somewhere towards the end of that year, as we added a bunch more executives to the company, we had money. The center of gravity was actually moving from Montreal to San Francisco. And eventually they were in the process of planning of really moving the whole company. So just, there were a lot of changes happening in the company, changes to the way the company was run, changes to my role, changes to who had power, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't like it. Like, it didn't go that well for me personally. Partially, I think it was about me losing certain power within the organization, like having less influence and giving up some of my special projects. Part of it was maybe some aspects of the way the culture was developing. It's a fine thing to have a high performance culture. Sometimes it can get, you know, very much on the edge. And I think at the time Sonder walked that line, like sometimes they were pushing very hard and it was not always at my speed. Part of what was interpersonal and the way that I interacted with specific players in the company. So it went from this thing of being like, wow, I'm a crucial member of the brain trust of this company and I'm having a big impact and I'm doing work that I love and it's great, to this doesn't feel that good. And then a few weeks after that, they were like, you're out. This is the next phase of the company is coming. We're kind of like moving everything around. We have all this leadership and different people coming in. Having you with the amount of power that you want to have and the influence that you want to have and the way you want to work in this company, not a fit anymore. And not like, hey, you know, we're going to find something else for you to do. No, that's it. Like, end of the line. We're going to go forward with other people. And it was one of those like shocking, but not shocking things. I was like, that's not what I wanted to have happen. But as I take a step back, I'm like, huh, I'm not so surprised. Like, I also felt that there was something off.
My grandmother used to always say that if you're in any average intelligence, you've actually thought about most eventualities that would happen to you, but you can never guess how it would feel. So when it shows up, it's always surprising.
And that's a great way to put it. And it was a punch in the gut. But then when you, and maybe I thought about it, maybe I'm not, but after a while it becomes clear. You're like, oh, I see why that happens. And maybe it's for the good. Oh, certainly it did turn out to be for the good. So that was it. And here I was, like, out on the street, so to speak, not in the sense of not having my home anymore, but certainly being out of this place that I had, and I was fully committed. Like, that is my kind of way. I was there 50 hours, 60 hours, 70 hours. Like, we used to do exec meetings at 7:30 in the morning. It was crazy. And I was there for all of it. So it wasn't just stepping out of some job. It was stepping out of something that I was super committed to. And, you know, it was pulled out from under me. And it was a little, not super acrimonious, but a little bit acrimonious at the end. And, you know, it's impossible to not take that as a judgment at some level on you and either your skills or the way that you work. There's something, like, part of that outcome is something that I have to own. So there's that hit to my ego or my sense of self and the pain of realizing that if there's a failure, that part of that failure is on me. So that is that's where I'm at.
I've been there.
Coming out of that. Yeah. And it didn't feel that good. I think it was the middle. Yeah, it was like the middle of the summer. So it's a time when you want to be like taking a break. But I was like, oh no, I'm really going to take a break because I just don't have a job now. And many people have been there, so it's not sort of unprecedented that you kind of lose a role like that. But it was definitely something that where I was really feeling the pain. And I was also at a moment where I was like, huh, okay, I've done these like two stints in product management in Montreal companies. I've moved forward. I've done well. I like the field, but do I want to keep doing that? Do I want to found a company? What other options might be in place for me? And so I'm noodling on that. Is this a moment where I might want to change direction? I don't know. I'm still reeling a little bit, but I'm starting to spin my wheels. And so during that same week where all this goes down, and I just remember very well because I remember where you are in certain cases. It's like I was still playing Ultimate Frisbee at the time. Once a week in like a sort of pickup game actually on a team, but anyway, and the game had ended. So it's sort of in the evening on a summer evening. And I get this, I guess I get a call from John Stokes, who's one of the, partners at Real Ventures. He said, hey, you know, word on the street is that you're a free agent, one of those calls. And I'm like, wow. Yeah. News travels fast because I think it had been 2 days, but right, like they're clicked in, like they're investors in the company. He's like, let's have lunch on Friday. Catch up. You know, like, sure, let's have lunch on Friday. That's nice. I love John, and let's see what he has to say. I don't really know what it's about. And so then that Friday, or maybe I'm compressing things, maybe there's a 2 week period, but like it's all happening very quickly. Like I'm having lunch with John. At this Japanese restaurant near Notman House, where you can do a little business lunch. And I'm curious, like, what's this about? Is it just a check-in or whatever? And he's like, look, we have some projects spinning up in the firm that we need, like, investors to work on, right? Could you see yourself doing that? Would you like to come and be part of this team and become an investor and sort of change your hat and change your focus and do something new? We think that you'd be good at it, and we know you, and we probably gave me some details at that point about what it was, and it wasn't fully dialed in, and it was going to be something that may or may not happen, but it's like, you know, would you be keen? And first of all, my answer was like, yeah, that not what I was looking for necessarily, but sure, that could be very interesting. Yes, I'd like to come in and talk more, But back to the sort of theme of people looking out for you, I'm like, wow. I'm like, I just got turfed from this company that you know very well. And that's not necessarily a good look. And you're coming on the back of that and doubling down on me. That's incredible. And that was just such an incredible feeling of uplift and belief from another person. And I interrogated it a little bit. And, you know, what came out of that was like that here was someone who had a fairly full view, relatively speaking, as much as you could from the outside of who I was. He'd seen me work at Frank and Oak. He'd seen me at Founder Fuel. He'd seen me at Notman House. He'd seen me in the community. And to him, I won't speak for him, but it's like that entire data set was what he was basing the judgment on, not the way things went down at the end at Sonder. And that is a career-changing, life-changing thing. And maybe there were other people who helped them make that decision. I knew Alan pretty well as well, so I'm not saying he acted on his own, but I do think he took the initiative and has basically created the pathway that I've been walking on for now the last kind of 8-9 years. And the pathway is open for me for many years. So I've like created this opportunity for me. And that's just very powerful and something that I'm really grateful for.
Love that. I love that. And then you took over Founder Fuel and just the impact you had on like the local Montreal ecosystem. And tell us a little bit more about that.
There was deep alignment between who I was and what Real Ventures was about. And that's why that decision went down, right? Because there was all of this common ground and common viewpoint. Not only did that make it possible to get it done, and it turned out that, just to provide details, that there was a second fund being spun up that was just for Quebec companies. So it's going to be side of the main fund. They needed more people to work on it. They had Sylvain Carl. They needed another person. So Sylvain and I collaborated on the fund, and then we brought Katie in years later, and that fund is still going under her management. So that was the project, which did turn out to be a real project. And we did get $30 million or $31 million. And I spent years helping to invest and then look after the investments. Everything else, like it was so what they were up to, investing in seed companies and doing Founder Fuel and doing other platform stuff and doing other community, like I was 100% teed up to do that work. So then we're like, someone needs to run Founder Fuel. Yeah. I want to run Founder Fuel. Like I would love to make 8 investments a year and then do three months of programming and then bring all the communities and mentors. Like nothing would make me happier than doing that job. I want to go do all of this pre-seed investing. And they even made one of my first projects at Real Ventures was I met Raf and Eleonora and Nico, who were the founders of Front Row Venture. And it was just as we were forming the fund. And I brought that in to the team. I said, hey, we could give $600,000 to students and they could invest the money under our supervision. And they're like, sounds like a good thing. Sounds like a Real Ventures project. And they helped me push that through with our limited partners and get operational funding for it out of the Real Ventures management fees, and ended up, we raised more money for it. And now it's sort of gone in a different direction. So not only was it like, hey, here, come drive the boats that we already have in the water. It's like, oh, you want to put a new boat in the water? Yeah, we'll support you with that too. And so they really, and that's the vibe of a great organization. It brings people in and empowers them. And so it was fantastic. And they had built up so much brand equity with founders and with the community that it's like sourcing deals was very easy. Getting into, I used to get deal flow from the American investors. They'd be like, we want a local partner and we know you guys are legit. And so do you want to do the other part of it? Sure, absolutely. So it was like, it made it very, very easy to do the work. Obviously I had to go hustle and meet founders and be myself and build my own brand. But the Real Ventures machine at that point created such a tailwind that I could just like fly along with it. And so it was just an incredible platform to stand upon. And I got to sit there and watch Janet and John and JS and Mark and Alan and Sam make investments out of the bigger fund and sit there and learn from them and attend the ICs. So there was this learning platform where I didn't even have to do anything. I just read memos and attended ICs. And so what a golden opportunity. And back to the theme of this pod, that was one decision of one guy or a group of people was saying, hey, we believe in you, even though not everything has gone perfect for you over this period of time. And so that it was awesome. You know, there were other challenges that Real experienced, which I don't think are the topic here, but it's nice to reflect back on all of the things that they had going for them. And I was like one of the main beneficiaries. And then you can take that, you don't take that energy and hold it close. You just spread it out to the world and you're like, yeah, I've got this. We have money. We can back your companies. We can support your community initiatives. We can support Front Row Ventures. We're going to take what we have and we're going to put it back out there in the universe. And that's the MO. That was the MO of the firm. And so just super positive experience for me.
Love it, man. Like I met you right after that transition, I remember. And you had a whole different energy. Like the energy you had then is way different than the energy you have now. Like the energy I know you with. So I can only imagine what was going on in it. But what help are you always willing to give that folks might not know about?
Sure. It's a great question. And I'll just say about helpfulness. So first of all, anybody can help anybody, right? And there's a level at which no matter what your job is or what your situation is, we all have this opportunity to take a little bit of energy that we have and pay it forward and help someone out and do them a solid. One of my favorite parts about being an investor in particular, it is actually your job. Like, and if, you know, in a way that creates a higher bar, it's not like you can't just help people every now and then. You got to be like always helping people. On the flip side, really? That's my job to always help people? Like sign me up. You know what I mean? It is truly, now everybody approaches the role differently. And I think early stage investors are the most in that sort of pay it forward, you know, helpful mindset. But I think most investors have this mindset and most of them have this in their job description. So that's what I love. So how does that manifest? Number one, it is literally my job to meet companies all day. And while Pender has a fairly narrow thesis about what kind of stuff we're looking for, I will continue. So obviously, I love to meet companies that are in that thesis area, even if they're miles away from our revenue thresholds, because now it's almost self-interested helping. I'm going to give you feedback on your deck and I'm going to make some interest to some pre-seed and seed investors. And I'm trying to line up for that round in 2 or 3 years if I can. But in the meantime, it's all just give it away for free because maybe I collect on that, maybe I don't. So I'll always help companies in the thesis area. But if it's early stage, I'll still take the meeting when I have time, especially if it's in Montreal, especially if it's like a woman founder or a founder from a disadvantage, from a like a less advantaged background, because it's like I have all of this information about how to pitch your company, who might invest in it, how to approach the whole process of being VC-backed, or even if should you be VC-backed. And in 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, like I can actually genuinely say 2 or 3 things or make 1 or 2 connections that will be useful. So number one, the stuff that I do week in, week out is helping early stage founders navigate that world. And I'm, you know, sort of had to do less of it transitioning at Pender in the sense of like spending less 30-minute calls. But even now I just shift a bunch to email and I go, look, I don't have time to do a whole 30-minute call on your sort of deep tech battery company, which is way outside of our thesis, but send me your deck and I will send you comments back on it. Like on Sunday morning, I'll read the deck. And so I'll still do that, even if it's a little bit less of my time. So helping early stage startups in some way to move their project forward. And the other thing, two other things, let's say, I'm so passionate about community building and building these platforms. I have some network and expertise or whatever. So if you're like building a community platform or doing something that is of that spirit of creating a better environment for other people in our innovation community or whatever community, I don't really care. I love to help out on that stuff because it's just a little bit goes a long way and everybody benefits. The last one, and again, this is aligned with my work, which is why the job is so good. Talented people, you know, sales leaders, great product managers, you know, amazing designers, great recruiters. It's kind of my job to know those people and either get them into my portfolio companies or refer them somewhere else or whatever. And so I'm just like always, that is the stock and trade of many VCs is who do you know and who can you connect to? And so I'm just always looking to meet people for a coffee, for an email exchange, or for a quick Zoom. And then what can I do with no direct expectation of return? Who can I connect you to? What little piece of feedback can I give you? It's just part of what I'm supposed to be doing anyway. And I get so much personal gratification. So all those things are on tap. I'm pretty easy to find online. I do reply to cold inbound if it's like actually meant for me. One thing, leaving my very Quebec bubble and leaning into a more Canadian and even North American thing with Pender, you're just like, oh, there's so many people out there that are so interesting doing cool things. And so I just, it never ends. There's always more people to meet and I'm always up for it. And so kind of that's what I've got to offer.
Lovely story, dude. Like all the things you mentioned is exactly how I know you. Like, so for me, like yeah. I have this constant duh going on in my head now as you're saying this. But dude,
it's beautiful.
Isaac, thanks for coming on the podcast. Love the story. I don't know when you're going to be down in Toronto, but I'm probably going to be in Montreal sooner than that. So like, we'll get to see each other.
Well, I look
and
forward
hang
to
out.
That. I just want to say thank you. This is a beautiful thing that you're doing and putting it out there and giving people like me a chance to kind of talk about what we've been through and sharing it with the world. So I think this is emblematic of the stuff that I'm into. Proud of you for getting it going and really happy to be a part of it.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks a ton.